It's a privilege to be engaged in worship with you this evening. I do ask you pray for us what time we stand before you. I'd like to draw your attention tonight to the fourth chapter, back to the fourth chapter of 2 Timothy. We have in the last several months been going through this book in some detail. And before we talk about our thoughts tonight, we left off last time in verse 4 of 2 Timothy 4. And Paul is about to, in the verses we'll talk about tonight, go into really the final push of this book. And I've referenced several times throughout this series that 2 Timothy is a very personal book to Paul. Its history tells us it's the last one he wrote. You're going to see some evidence of that tonight in the things that Paul says. But as Paul is preparing this young man for life after he's gone, he mentions all these things are going to happen. In chapter 3, he talks about the perilous times and the 19 things that are going to accompany it. He talks about how men are going to go after their own thoughts, their own imagination, rather than actually giving heed to sound doctrine. And the last verse that we considered, the last time we talked about this in verse 4, he says, "They shall turn their ears away from the truth and shall be turned unto fables." And we certainly see all that in the world in which we live today, that men have indeed gone very much away from the truth and are turned to their own ways, their own devices, what they think, what they want. And in all these things, you find that time after time after time, Paul has encouraged the young minister to not let circumstances dictate his behavior. We believe in the world in which we live that there is some situational awareness that we need to have. I mean, obviously, there's times we need to speak and sometimes we don't. There's times that we need to act and sometimes we don't. But we do not believe in situational ethics or conditional morality. What the world does and the things that go on in the world should not govern what is right and wrong in our lives. Right is right, always has been. Wrong is wrong, always will be. And Paul is going to continue this because in verse 4, when he says they're going to turn their ears away from the truth and be turned into fables, notice how verse 5 begins. He says, "But watch thou in all things, endure afflictions." He says, "Do the work of an evangelist, make full proof of thy ministry." In other words, in spite of all that you see, in spite of all that is going on, he says, continue to watch in all things. Don't deter from what it is that you're doing. And as I've brought out many times that, I've heard some say, well, what Paul told Timothy is what's good for a minister. Friends, what's good for me is good for you. I mean, we don't have different standards. We don't have different levels of living. I'm always amazed whenever I meet somebody, and I don't wear on my sleeve the fact that I'm a minister. I mean, if you see me at work, I don't look like one. I probably don't act like one. But, you know, when someone finds out that you're a minister, you can just see them replaying their life in their head and all the things they've done and said in your presence. Like, what did he hear me say? What has he seen me do? And I always want to tell them I'm just like you are in the sense that I got to wake up and get out of bed just like you do. I got to put my boots on one at a time just like you do. And whether I see you or not, or whether I've ever observed anything or not, the Lord sees everything. The Lord knows everything. He knows what I don't, and he knows what you're doing. So, that being the case, what Paul is telling Timothy is good for all of us. We need to watch in all things. We do need to endure afflictions, and it's not easy. I'm not going to stand here and tell you that life is easy. It's not. I'm not going to stand here and tell you if you do the right thing, it's going to be easy. It's not. That's why Paul says to Timothy, you need to endure. And there's some things that have to be endured in this world in fighting the good fight of faith. But he says, do the work of an evangelist, make full proof of thy ministry. And in verse 6, it's almost like he changes course. It's almost like he changes direction. He doesn't. But in verse 6, and I'm going to read 6, 7, and 8 together, Paul has this to say. He says, for I am now ready to be offered, and the time of my departure is at hand. I fought a good fight. I finished my course. I've kept the faith. Henceforth, there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give to me at that day, and not to me only, but unto all them also that love his appearing. Many times when I've considered this this passage in the past, I've actually preached on verse 7 many times in the past in my ministry, but when I've considered this, I've never really thought about how verse 5 ties and connects to 6, 7, and 8. It almost looks like two separate thoughts. But I want to bring before you this evening that what Paul was saying in verse 5 about watching, enduring, and making full proof of his ministry He's telling Timothy, this isn't just something I want you to do in spite of all the things you see in the world. He said, this is what I want you to do even knowing that I'm going to be gone. Even knowing that I'm going to be departed from you, I'm not going to be with you anymore. One of the things that I had to learn at a very early age is that whenever my parents instructed me to do that which was right, a lot of times my behavior depended on whether I was in their presence or not. Now, I've got children of my own now, and I see this play out. When daddy is in the room, behavior is a whole lot different than when daddy's not there. I always get tickled that whenever I'm off on a preaching trip and I call home, I'll ask Angela, I said, how is it? She said, like it always is when you're gone, they're wild and out of control. And it's amazing when I think about, yeah, that's the same stuff that we did to my mom. That's the kind of stuff. But, you know, I heard a sermon when I was a teenager, and it made a really big impression on me. In that sermon, the minister said this. He said, what if every day of your life, every step you took, you had your mom on one side and your dad on the other side walking with you every step of the journey? How would your life look? What would your behavior be like? And I started thinking, well, not like it is right now. And then he said this. He said, but consider that every step you take, the Holy Ghost is still in you. Jesus Christ is still beside you and the Father is ever before you. When you think about it in that light, in that context, every step that we take, I mean, it pales in comparison to our parents standing with us. God is standing with us every step of the journey. And what Paul is telling Timothy is, I'm not going to be with you anymore. But in spite of me not being with you, in spite of me not making the journey with you, mine's about to end. He said, this is what you need to do no matter what happens to me. Paul says, I'm going away. He said, I'm going to be departed from you. And then he says, I'm looking forward to it, actually. He says, I'm looking forward to going away because I have fought a good fight. I've finished my course. I've kept the faith. And Paul is not saying this in a bragging way. He's saying this in a very thankful way. He says, I have fought a good fight. You know, Paul was about ready to leave this world, and he was leaving without regrets. You know, if there was anybody who had stuff to regret, you would think it would be Paul. I mean, Paul lived with a lot of guilt. He lived with a lot of misery over things that he had done. When he was Saul of Tarsus, I mean, he was responsible for church members going to jail. When he was Saul of Tarsus, he was responsible for church members being murdered. And yet, in spite of all that, at the end of this man's life, he says, I have fought a good fight. You know how he could say that? Because the Lord had given him sufficient grace. He'd given him sufficient strength that he was able to overcome the guilt that he had. I mentioned this at lunch today, and I'm going to mention it again here. You've heard me say this many times over the last several years. But guilt is a very tricky thing. Guilt will treat people different. Some people, when they have guilt, they're going to react in a very different way than somebody else. It would have been very easy for Paul to lay down. It would have been very easy for Paul to say, Lord, I'm not going to do it. It would have been very easy for Paul to say, there's no way that I can do what you're asking me to do because they know what kind of person I was. They know what kind of behavior and kind of iniquity that I committed. But instead of that, what did the Lord tell him? Same thing we mentioned this morning. He says, my grace is sufficient for thee. My strength is made perfect in weakness. So Paul was able, in spite of all that he had been, in spite of all that he had done, he was able to feel the sufficiency of God's grace. He was able to have his strength made perfect in his own weakness so that he could do and fulfill the things that God had commanded him to do. Whenever you think about the work that Paul did, going around preaching, establishing churches, mentoring young men like Timothy in the ministry, Paul would have not been able to do all that if he had been dealing and still fighting with the guilt that he had. And I tell you tonight, child of God, that if you are still dealing and fighting with guilt, if you're still dealing and fighting with struggles inside, it is going to keep you from doing what you need to do and fulfilling the course you need to fulfill that God has set before you. No, you're not. You may not be a minister, but God has given us all talents. He's given us all abilities to use. He's given us all service to do in His kingdom. And without our full attention towards Him, when we're dealing with guilt, you know what the problem is? Guilt is a lot like a lot of other things. When you have guilt, where is the focus? Where is your attention? Is it on Him? No, it's on you. And friends, my attention doesn't need to be on me. My attention and focus needs to be upon Him. And the Apostle Paul was able to feel that. He said, I fought a good fight. I wasn't perfect. I didn't do everything right. He says, but at the end of my life, I can say I fought a good fight. You know, when I was young, I thought, many of you know that one of my childhood dreams was to play for the Boston Celtics next to Larry Bird. When I realized that I was too short, too white, and too slow to do that, I had a second childhood dream. And that second childhood dream was, well, maybe I'll become a prize fighter. Now, I've never told you all this, but I'm going to tell you this tonight. And my parents, I don't know if it was to make a point or what, they bought my brother and I two sets of boxing gloves one year for Christmas. I don't know what they were thinking. Well, after a lot of bloody noses and after several rounds of us, you know, taking our frustration out on each other, Dad said, I've had about enough of y'all. And so he got down on his knees. I was probably, you know, a teenager at this point. He got on his knees, put on a set of gloves and said, come on. And he knocked me so silly. And then after that, the boxing gloves got thrown away that I decided then that maybe prize fighting was not for me. But I told you that story to tell you this one. When I started working at a grocery distribution warehouse years ago, there was a man there that I worked with who was a part-time boxer. And he told me that there has never been a single fighter who has ever fought a perfect fight. But he said, you could say you had a good fight whether you won or lost based on the way you conducted yourself in the ring. Now, I didn't think about it at the time, but when I started thinking about this verse, you know, the Apostle Paul didn't get everything right. The Apostle Paul certainly wasn't perfect. And it wasn't really about whether Paul won or lost. What it was about was if he had done what the very best that he could with what he had at the time. And Paul says to Timothy, I've done that. What's the encouragement? Timothy, you're not going to be perfect. Timothy, you're not going to do everything right. Timothy, you're not going to be focused on winning and losing, but do the very best that you can with what you have in front of you every step of the journey that when you look back, you can say, I fought a good fight. Paul then says, I finished my course. Timothy, mine's about done. My race is about over. My race is about run. Yours may be just beginning. And I won't be here with you, but look at the course that others have set before you. Look most of all at the course of Jesus Christ. He says that you will finish your course also. The Apostle Paul, he had a lot he could have had regret over. He had a lot that he could have had misery over. But you know, the Apostle Paul, when it came to his course, he finished it in the right way. I have visited with a lot of people over the years who were nearing the end. I visited with people who knew they had a short time left on earth. And many times, someone's behavior and their attitude on their deathbed really shows what kind of life they've led. Because if somebody has spent their life in vain, if somebody has spent their life wasting time and doing things that really didn't come to any profit, they lay on their deathbed with a lot of regret. May even lay on their deathbed with a lot of anger that they're not able to do the things that they want to do. But you know, someone who's spent their life serving God and ministering to His people, someone who has been very kind and gracious to his neighbor, been very charitable and long-suffering, that kind of person, when it comes to the end of their life, it's a very different story. It's a very different experience. I've visited with a lot of people that when I was going to see them, I was really worried about what I was going to say. I was really worried about what I was going to do to, you know, pick up their spirits and lift them up. I mean, how do you talk to somebody who's been told by the doctor, you've got cancer, it's all through your body, and you've got just a few days to live? What am I going to say to somebody like that? You walk through the door, and they got a big smile on their face, they got happiness in their eyes, and they say, I'm going home. And at that point, they start preaching to you because they know and they can see and understand that they're very close to being at home, being at rest. That's a wonderful experience, but somebody will have that when they've spent their life like the Apostle Paul had, and they'll be able to finish their course a certain way. Notice what Paul says in Acts chapter 20. In Acts chapter 20, Paul is making his final ministerial journey, and the boat stops in Ephesus, and he talks to the elders at Ephesus and tells them, a lot like he's telling Timothy, this is the last time you're going to see me. This is the last time we're going to talk. He tells them about the things he's experienced. He tells them about the things that he's done. He tells them about the things that he expects to see in the coming days. But he has this to say in verse 23 and 24. He talks about the trouble that came upon them. He talks about the distress they were in. He talks about all the tragedy that they experienced. But he says this in verse 24. He says, but none of these things move me. In other words, my life being in jeopardy, me suffering all these things, he said, it doesn't move me. He said, none of these things move me. Notice the next thing. He says, neither count I my life dear unto myself. I mean, I don't think there's any one of us who would say, yeah, I'm just ready to die. Sign me up. I'm ready to go. But Paul said, he said, if this cost me my life, he said, I'm not worried about it. But here's what did concern Paul. He said, none of these things move me. Neither count I my life dear unto myself. He says, that I might finish my course with joy. I'm going to say something I've said many times, but there's people here who haven't heard me much, if at all, so I'm just going to say it again. I've heard a lot of people say over the years, well, I hope I just get through this. Well, I hope I can just make it through this. You're going to. You're going to make it through everything in life. Whether in life or in death, you're going to get through it. You're going to make it through it. That's not the point. You know, the old expression when you're raising children is, the first thing you want your children to do is do what you tell them. The second thing you want to do is do what you tell them in the right way. Because it's really hard, you know, to get the point across that when you're having a fight, you need to hug it out. You let it the first few times go hugging it out like this. You'll let that go. But over time, you want them to do it in the right way. You want them to smile about it. But over time, you want it to go even further than that. You want to do it the right thing in the right way because they want to. That's what you hope for your children. That's what you want for their growth and their development. Well, you know, the Lord God Almighty, He wants the same for us. It starts by us doing the right thing, but He wants us to do it in the right way, and He wants us to do it for the right reason. And the Apostle Paul was not doing this because it was his duty. He was not doing this because the Lord told him to do so, and he wasn't doing it because the Lord told him to do so and doing it in the right fashion. He was doing it because he wanted to. It was Paul's highest joy to serve God's people. It was his highest joy to minister to God's humble poor. And he says, I'm doing this so that I can finish my course with joy. And he's telling Timothy, I finished my course. I don't have any regrets. I look back and I've had a good life. The Lord's been good to me. And I'm going out in a very high and joyful fashion. May it be the same for all of us. And then the last thing he says in verse 7 is he says, I have kept the faith. I'm so very thankful that the Apostle Paul said it this way. You know, the Apostle Paul, if anybody on earth could have been charged and should have been charged with not keeping the faith but altering it or modifying it, it would have been Paul. I mean, he wrote more of the New Testament than anybody else. I mean, he wrote so many church epistles and ministerial epistles. If there had been anybody given grace by God to change things in the church as they wanted, it would have been Paul. But Paul says this. He says, I have kept the faith. I have kept and I have ministered the very same that I gave me. Go back with me to chapter 2 in verse 2. We talked about this, I don't know how many months ago in this series. But the Apostle Paul commands Timothy and charges him. He said, the things which thou hast heard of me among many witnesses, the same commit thou to faithful men who shall be able to teach others also. When I was ordained into the ministry, I was ordained to keep and hold on to and to teach the things concerning the faith. It's not my duty and not my job to come up with something different than that's in this book. It's my job to faithfully declare what this book says and to minister to God's people the faith that God has given to us, the faith that Jude says was once delivered unto the saints. Paul says, I've kept it. I have kept it just as I received it. I've delivered it just as I received it. He tells the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 1, he says, be ye therefore followers of me, even as I am of Christ Jesus, and keep the ordinances which I have delivered unto you. Paul tells him, you do exactly what I say, because I'm telling you exactly as it was told me. And it's our duty today to hold on to and to teach exactly what has been taught by Christ, His apostles, and the church down through the generations. Paul says, I've kept the faith. I've held on to it. I've tried to cherish it all my days. And as much as I love the idea of Paul keeping the faith in the sense that he wasn't going to change it, I love the sense that this word keep has, that it also means to cherish. You know, when I took a vow almost 15 years ago, standing there beside a young lady who was still very beautiful in my eyes, I promised to love, to honor, and to cherish her all the days of my life. And friends, that's a vow that it's not just that I stay with her because it's my duty. It's not just that I stay with her and do it because it's the right thing to do. It's something that I should do because I want to. And Paul says, I have cherished the faith. I have held on to it and kept it. It's been very valuable to me. When you look at the
fifth of the seven kingdom parables in Matthew 13. The fifth of those parables in verse 43 and 44 says, "The kingdom of heaven is likened to a treasure hid in a field, which when a man hath found, he goeth and he selleth all that he hath, and buyeth the field for the treasure that is therein." Friends, that's what the faith should be to us. It's a treasure that you find in this old world. It's something special that you can't find anywhere else. I've said before that when I come to church, I'm not here because I have to be. I'm not preaching to you because it's my duty. I'm here because I want to be. I'm doing what God has called me to do. Yes, it is my duty, yes. But friends, what I'm doing, I am doing because it's my pleasure and my privilege to serve God in this fashion. It's our pleasure and our privilege to come before Him with praise and to honor Him with gladness. And when you see this treasure, when you see what God has left us in His Word, in His church, and in His kingdom, it's worth selling all that we have for. It's worth losing our life for. It's worth giving up all that we have. Because friends, this is God's house. It's God's kingdom. It's God's people. It's God's book. It's God's cause. And it's God's name that we uphold. That's worth holding on to. It's worth losing everything for. And Paul says, "I've kept it. I've held on to it. It's been my privilege to be a part of it." And friends, I can tell you it hasn't always been the case with me, because I grew up in the church. I mean, I was one of those rascally preacher's children. I grew up getting into trouble. But friends, it's my privilege and it's my highest pleasure and joy to serve God and His kingdom. And I hope that I do so all the days of my life. And that's what Paul's telling Timothy. Timothy, be faithful to death. Do as I have done. It wasn't perfect, but do as I have done. And that I can look back and say it was a joy and a privilege to be with the Lord's people and to be there when I was and doing the things that I did. And in verse 8, I love how verse 8 starts. Verse 8 starts by the word henceforth. Aren't you glad? Verse 8 does not start with the word therefore. I've made a big deal over the years, and will continue to do so, that language is important. Words have meanings. And if Paul had said, therefore, I would have to say that what he's about to say in verse 8 depends on his behavior in verse 7. What if Paul had said, I fought a good fight, I finished my course, I've kept the faith, therefore, there's laid up for me a crown of righteousness. I would have to say the crown of righteousness that is laid up for Paul in heaven depends on his behavior and his activity and his life that he lived here below. And I'm thankful to tell you this evening that is not the case. You and I have something laid up for us in heaven because of what Jesus Christ did, not because of what we did. You and I have in heaven a far more eternal and enduring weight of glory, not because of something we have done, but because of something He's done for us. If it was up to me, I wouldn't make it. If it was up to you, you wouldn't make it. If it was up to anybody, none of us would make it. But thankfully, it wasn't up to us. Thankfully, it was Christ's job, and He fulfilled it just as the Father gave Him to do. That's why Paul says the word henceforth. The word henceforth is not a common word today. It's a word that, you know, I'm sure if you used it in your regular everyday language, someone would say, "What do you mean?" I'm always amazed when I use words that I don't think are all that strange. People say, "What?" Have you ever used the word hast? H-A-S-T? I mean, it's really a past tense perfect of has or hath. If you say that, someone will say, "What?" And I'll say, "Hast." And they'll say, "What is hast?" And you start trying to explain it to them, and they say, "Why don't you say have or has?" I said, "It's not exactly what I mean." If you use the word henceforth, most people today are probably going to say, "What exactly does that mean? What are you saying? Is that a real word?" I mean, I hadn't been up here that long. All right, let me just give me 2 minutes on a soapbox. All of you know I don't have a cell phone. All of you know I don't text. I do not understand texting language. I do not understand why you would say T-H-N-K-S instead of thanks. I mean, you left out one letter. How much time are you saving? I'm sorry, is this too personal? All right. I don't understand texting language, but there's one thing I have observed ever since texting has become popular is people understand less and less about language than they ever have before. I mean, the fact that, you know, when I'm at work and we have this little communicator thing at work, whenever I start typing on it, I mean, my section of the conversation is way bigger than everybody else's section. I mean, I'm using complete sentences and complete words, and they've got all these things. I'm like, I think I know what that means. I think I don't know what he just said. You know, I have to ask, what does this acronym mean? What does this abbreviation mean? They use these things that I don't know what they're talking about. My point is this. When you use a word like henceforth, it's a very special word. It's a word that, some of y'all don't know why I did that. I can look at all of you right now. Some of you were fading. But when I started talking about texting, everybody perked up. So anyway, you're glad you're all back with me. All right, so here we go. When you use a word like henceforth literally means it's something that is presently true, and it will continue to be presently true indefinitely into the future. So what Paul is saying is he's saying right now something is true. You know why that's special? Because right when Paul wrote that, Paul wasn't up there yet. Right there when Paul wrote it, Paul was still on earth. But Paul says it is a reality that right now, Timothy, while I'm writing this, there is something in heaven waiting for me. And friends, tonight, even though you and I are upon this earth, there is something in heaven right now that's a reality waiting on us. It's something that you and I can look forward to, something that you and I can have trust in, something that you and I can have resolve in. Because if you and I were living this world, and we knew that starting on January the 1st, everything was going to collapse. Everything was going to go bad. Everything was just going to fall apart. Finances were going to go down. The whole world was just going to go into the toilet. You and I might say, what am I going to do? But if you further receive the news that on January the 1st, everything's going to go down, but on July the 1st, you're going to get $3 million added to your bank account, you're thinking, okay, it's going to be bad, but maybe I can make it. Maybe I can survive until July. Well, friends, this is even better than that. Because even though life goes astray, even though every day life throws us curveballs, I submit to you that one day you and I are going to have way more than $3 million. You and I are going to be heirs of God and joint heirs with Jesus Christ in heaven and immortal glory. You and I are going to stand there before the King in all His glory, clothed in His beauty, arrayed in the robe of His righteousness, and we're going to stand there with the image of Jesus Christ. Paul says, that's waiting for me. Paul didn't just say it was waiting for him. He says, it's waiting also for all them that love His appearing. Paul said, it's not just mine. He said, Timothy, it's yours too. It's not just theirs, friends. It's ours as well. Because God has left us the assurance in this world that no matter how bad life gets, no matter how gloomy this old world gets, no matter how many things it throws in our face, it can never and will never change what is waiting for us in heaven. You and I are going home to be in heaven to a place where we cannot even possibly imagine how great it's going to be. You and I are going to see the King in all His righteousness. You and I are going to see the glory of heaven in all its beauty. And when we stand there, I tell you this, there won't be any room for crying. There won't be any room for tears. There'll be no more heartache. There'll be no more loss because we're going to be standing in heaven with Jesus Christ Himself. Paul says it's waiting. It's a reality. And it's going to continue being a reality. I'm thankful to tell you that all these years later, almost 2,000 years after Paul wrote this, that is still a reality today. We're living in a world, as I mentioned this morning, where people will tell you that this book is out of date. They'll tell you a service like this is out of date. They'll say, well, that was good for hundreds of years ago, but we're living in a different time now. You know what kind of time we're living in? Man's the same as he's always been. He's just got new ways to do what he wants to do. We're living in the same time we've always been, always had, but the devil has new avenues to do the things that he's always done. I mean, when you boil all this world down, it still fits into what John said in 1 John 2:17. He said, all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is of the devil. It's not of the Father. I mean, it doesn't matter whether you're talking about the internet, television, radio, or anything they had hundreds of years ago. It still boils down to the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. But you know what also is the same? He's the same God now that He was 2,000 years ago. His promises are the same now as they were 2,000 years ago. And 10,000 years into the future, His promises will still be just as true, just as real, and just as valid as they are right now. Why? Because He doesn't change. Because He doesn't change, His promises don't change. Because His promises don't change, our future doesn't change. And because our future doesn't change, we have every reason tonight to rejoice in what the Lord has done for us. What's Paul's message to Timothy? Is it, Timothy, get my funeral ready? Timothy, I'm about to leave. Hope you have a good service for me. He's saying, no, Timothy, I'm about to leave. But your course hasn't changed, or it shouldn't. Your commands and your charge hasn't changed. But more than that, Timothy, your God hasn't changed. He is still as worthy now as he was then. He will be as worthy then as he is now. Because what he has done for us, it endures long after this world is gone. Let me close with the last phrase that Paul gave there. He says that the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give to me at that day, and not to me only, but unto all them also that love his appearing. You know, there's a group of people in this world who I'm convinced their sole purpose for being in this world is to try to make money off the children of God's fears. They have a doctrine that scares people into doing things, and they want money to fund their scare doctrine. I said something this morning, I'm going to say it again tonight. The end of the world is nothing for the child of God to fear. The end of the world is the greatest day this world has ever known, because we get to go home. But you know, they use expressions like this, unto all them that love his appearing. And say, well, if you don't love his appearing, if you're not living just right, well, I guess that's not going to be your home. That's not how this works. Paul would say in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 9 and 10, he says, for God hath not appointed us to wrath, but to obtain salvation through our Lord Jesus Christ, who died for us, that whether we wake or sleep, we should live together with him. What makes the difference on whether we go to heaven? Is it whether we're awake or whether we're asleep? No. Is it whether we're righteous or not? No. Is it whether when the Lord appears, if we're doing exactly what we ought to know? It's none of those things. Because again, if that was the case, none of us would make it. What makes the difference on whether we go to heaven? One thing and one thing only, that Christ died for us. So what does the expression mean? Unto all, not just to him only, but unto all them that love his appearing. I'm really going to show my age. There's a song that I don't know if it's popular anymore, but it used to be popular when I was a little boy. Not in any of our churches, but it was a popular song in the world. And that song was, wait a little longer, Lord Jesus. And I know there's people in this world who, when you talk about the end of the world, they talk about the second coming, there's a part of them that says, but there's so much I want to do. There's so much I want to see. There's so much that I still haven't experienced yet. I'm going to tell you, if the Lord came back right now and I didn't live to see grandchildren, I'm okay. If the Lord came back right now and I haven't seen places in this world that I kind of wanted to see, it's going to be okay. Because I assure you that when the Lord comes back, every single one that belongs to him is going to love it. Every single one that belongs to him is going to be overjoyed. Every single one of them that are his, that his Father gave him, that he died for, they're going to just be delighted at his appearing. I mean, there were times that when my parents walked the door, I wasn't delighted at their appearing. But I assure you, when Christ parts the skies, when he comes with clouds, as John says in Revelation 1 and 7, whenever he parts the skies and they're rolled back like a scroll, and we see him and all the holy angels with him, there's not going to be a single person that says, wait, Lord, I'm not ready. You know, when Lazarus was called out of the grave in John 11, he says, Lazarus, come forth. And Lazarus didn't holler back and said, not now. What happened? Lazarus came out. You know why he came out? Because the voice of the Son of God had such power to draw him out. And when the voice of the Son of God thunders from heaven and says, come home, we're going to be delighted to go home and to meet him in the air and ever be with the Lord. That is going to be a delightful occasion. So the next time somebody tries to tell you about the end of the world, like they're trying to scare you into doing something, just smile at them. Because when they tell me about the end of the world, I say, if it happens today, that's great. If it happens tomorrow, that's fine. Because friends, when the end of the world comes, you and I are going to be with the King forever and all eternity. Paul says it's going to be for those that love his appearing. There are going to be some that don't love his appearing. There's going to be some that wail when they see him. They're going to weep whenever they see him and realize the end has come. But friends, I'm telling you, when that day comes, whenever you and I see him as he is, whenever you and I can behold him with our own eyes, as Job said in Job 19, whenever our feet leave this old world and we enter into the gates of glory, we're going to see things that our wildest imagination can't possibly imagine. I'm not going to tell you that's going to happen in January or July or whenever. But friends, it's going to happen. It's a reality. And it doesn't matter what I face tonight, what I face tomorrow, what I face this week, what I face in 2018. It doesn't matter what I have to deal with. It doesn't matter what I have to go through. It doesn't matter what sorrows I have to endure. It doesn't matter what kind of afflictions I have to stomach. Friends, just one glimpse of glory is going to make all of that melt away. Just one sight of the King sitting upon His throne in all of our sorest trials that we've ever experienced in this world are just going to fade away. You know, there's a verse that talks about what happens when a woman brings forth a child. I watched this happen 4 times. If some of you haven't experienced this yet, buckle up. It's a wild ride. When you're in the delivery room, she gets extremely strong. When you get in the delivery room, she becomes at times extremely temperamental, and I'm being as charitable and judicious as I can. We have a young man in our office who found out this week that he's going to be a father for the first time. Let's just say he's rather unsettled. And because he works around a bunch of people like me and others like me, we've tortured him mercilessly this week, telling him stories about the delivery room. As he gets a little closer, I'll tell him this to make him feel better. It's always amazing to me to watch that scripture play out. A woman, when she is delivered of a child, what happens? She forgetteth the pangs of her travail for joy that a child is brought into this world. I watched that happen 4 times. It's almost immediate. It goes from all this struggle, all this sorrow, all this agony to peace on a much, much bigger scale when you and I see Him. Just that first glimpse, all this agony, all this struggle, all this sorrow, and all this travail, it's going to fade into peace just like that. Can you and I make it? We can. Are you and I going to get through it? We are. But I want us to be like Paul. I want us to get through this with joy, and I want us to have our best days in front of us that we can look back at the end of our life and say it's worth it. I'm ready to go home. I feel pretty confident that when Timothy approached the end of his life, there were probably people that he had mentored. There were people that he had tried to bring along. He probably told them something similar to what Paul told Timothy. There have been men that brought me along that when it got to the end of their time, they told me something similar. And I hope that when it comes my time to look back over the course of my life, I can tell those that I've tried to bring along, it's all been worth it. It's been a high joy. I'm ready to go home. And friends, one day, you and I are going to see Him, and we're going to rejoice in His presence forever and evermore. May we anticipate that day, but until that day, may we put our most faithful, fervent service into Him and glorifying Him as we should. May the Lord bless you.